Hey everybody, what's up? It's Josh here. I should always have like a calendar in front of me before I start these. Tuesday, September 26th. I just got back from a long trip in Philadelphia, also known as Philadelphia, where I don't have a hiccup in the middle of saying it. Went out there, had a great time, man. I got to unplug a little bit. Netta and I went out there, visited some family. We went to my buddy Chris Rabb's wedding to his wife Asha. Had a fantastic time doing that little Indian hybrid wedding up in the Poconos. Had a blast. And then we spent a little bit of time at my family's campground in Maryland. And not surprising at all, I should say. Netta got bit by a spider and maybe a bee. We don't know what it was. But then her leg ballooned up like crazy. And we thought she went into anaphylactic shock and had to take her to the ER and everything. So our trip ran a little bit longer than expected, and this podcast is coming out late. Big shocker there. But I love this episode. I brought it with me with the intention of editing it on the road and then didn't have access to internet or anything while I was traveling. But I loved coming back to the studio today and kind of listening through this episode and checking out just recapping everything that we talked about with Sam Tripoli, who's one of my favorite comics. I've known Sam for a long time. I met him when I first came to Los Angeles in 2009. And I think I met him briefly in a year before that, before I had even moved out. We had crossed paths somewhere else, but I can't put my finger on where. It might have been Chicago. But anyway, Sam's a legend in the game. He's been around forever. And one of the things I love about Tripoli is that, you know, anytime you talk to Sam, he will tell you the straight truth. He's not a politician in this business. And as somebody who, you know, likes to pride himself on the same sort of cadence, I find that refreshing. And I think that's one of the things that both of us like about each other is that we don't get any of that sort of Hollywood fake niceties or anything else. It's always just straight honesty. And you get a lot of that on this podcast. There's some good stuff, some dirt. We have a lot of fun. This was probably one of the funniest podcasts we've done for a while. And then we talk a little bit about comedy and the industry. And then, of course, what everybody was waiting for. We talked about my brief Twitter beef with Adam Richman. Something tells me that that's not dead yet. It's continued on his end since everything kind of came to a close. But I talk a little bit about the ethos of that, where it began, and, you know, if you're interested in that sort of thing, stay tuned. You'll hear it at the end. As far as comedy goes, not a lot on the schedule coming up. The Darkest Hour for October is canceled as the venue that we use is doing an improv festival, so we won't be there. But we'll be back with a killer lineup for Darkest Hour the second Friday of November. And also check out the Darkest Hour podcast on the Unpops Network. We should have some new episodes of that coming to you soon. Otherwise, I will be doing TMI Hollywood the first weekend in October. I think it's Sunday, October 8th. It's sort of like an SNL sketch variety show poking fun at Hollywood and the industry in Los Angeles. And they were nice enough to ask me to come host that weekend. So I'm excited for that. And then if you are in the LA area, you should come to the San Gabriel Dumpling Festival. I think it's the Dumpling and Beer Festival, both, but I don't drink, so for me, it's going to be all dumplings. I'm going to be judging their dumpling eating contest, and I'm probably also just going to be participating in it as well. Not while the clock is going, not on regulated time. I'm going to do like a bonus. I'm just going to eat all the dumplings. So let's be real. I'm excited for that. That is Thursday, October 5th in San Gabriel. There's details. You find it on my Twitter, Instagram, or anything else. I'm sure I'll have flyers up by then. But for now, enjoy this episode of March of the Pigs with Sam Tripoli.
Step right up. We'll be right back.
All right, man. Sam Tripoli. What's up, buddy?
Boom. At the headquarters.
This is the headquarters?
Ginormous food goes down.
Yeah. I don't know if this is what we would call
it. This is the war room.
Yeah. This is where we plan
everything. This is like, how much shit can we put on a hamburger and make this motherfucker eat it?
Yeah. This is where all the... This is where we conceptualize all the dishes. It's not.
Every commercial for a hamburger joint is like, we've put more stuff on here. Yeah. Can you believe? It's like unbelievable what they're putting on hamburgers now.
The other one that's funny too is like how Carl's Jr. is just like, not only are we going to put everything on the burger, but look at this hot bitch eat it.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Hey, you want to fuck this hamburger? Of course you do.
It's funny. We went to see It last night at one of the premiere screenings, like down the street at the iHeart Radio Theater. And spoiler alert, in the movie, the movie now takes place in 1989. And there's a fat kid in it. And they call him Tits. And I laughed immediately because I was like, that is what we called the fat kid. Yeah. In 89, 90, 91.
That is so funny.
And I was just like, so now, yeah, I'm the guy now that has tits.
Yeah.
And they're eventually going to
be fuckable.
Cast somebody. Hold on one second. I got a guy at my door who doesn't know how our fucking buzz code works.
There's just a random guy?
No, it's probably a delivery guy.
Oh, we just got done eating. You ordered more food?
No.
What the fuck is wrong with you? Guys, I'm going to take this time to talk about my new hot podcast called Tin Foil Hat. It's a skeptic show. It's a spiritual skepticism about the official narrative. So if you're into that stuff, boom, give it a shot. It's called Tin Foil Hat with Sam Tripoli. Rock out. Yes. So what else is up? So guys, big. Oh man, it's my mom. It's my mom's birthday today. I got to call her. I just remember it's my mom's birthday.
Oh yeah.
God damn,
here's
I got to call
her presents.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Postmates does it again.
More food.
How fucked up would that be if I?
That'd be so.
If it was like a pizza delivery guy.
That's great. That's great.
And you're just like, dude, you. I'm not one to tell people when they have a problem, but
yeah. Who am I to judge?
Yeah. What were you talking about while I was gone?
My
I know
cool
it's not
podcast,
nothing.
Tinfoil Hat.
That's good. One of two podcasts you do.
Yeah, I also do Punch Drunk Sports with Jason Tebow and Ari Shaffir.
That's good.
Yeah, pretty blessed. So what were we talking about
pretty
before?
Well, we did just go eat.
Yeah.
You brought that up.
Yeah, that was great.
We went to this place called Base Camp, which I think is a pretty douchey name for a little hipster breakfast camp.
Why? Why do you think it's douchey?
I don't know. I guess because of Dethrone Base Camp, which is like a CrossFit gym.
Oh.
So I'm just like, well, this is the opposite of that.
I was thinking more about climbing Mount Everest and like half people die.
Well, in that case, it's totally fitting.
Yeah.
You know what I didn't like about the place? I don't like when I walk in a place and it feels like a fucking library.
Well, that's true. I definitely felt I was in the lobby of somewhere.
Yeah.
I was looking for magazines to read and for babies to start crying.
Yeah. And it was
our
like,
dentist office, the only thing keeping the magazine industry alive.
You got to be right about that.
Right?
Yeah.
And so he goes in and you're like, here's a People magazine from 2009.
Yeah.
And you actually read it because you're so bored. You're like, oh, that doesn't work out.
Is Brad really going to leave Jennifer Aniston for Angelina? And you're just like, well, that ship is sailed.
But he's coming back around.
Do you ever feel like reading those things? Like you're looking at the almanac from Back to the Future 2 where you're just like, I could have made so much money if I go back and predict all this shit.
Did you ever, put out a tweet that you thought was going to get a billion likes and got nothing?
Yeah, every day.
Well, that's what I put out about that because the first weekend of college football, there were four humongous upsets.
Yeah.
And if you would have put $100 on that parlay, you could have won $197 million.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm like, yeah, Biff from Back to the Future went back and that's the parlay he made to win all of his cash. Thought it was genius. Like 20 likes.
Yeah.
20 likes.
Well, now it's to the point where no one's going to know Back to the Future until they fucking reboot it.
It's unbelievable.
Like, that's too dated of a reference now. Isn't that ridiculous? When we did that show together at the Ice House, like, what's that, a month ago?
Yeah.
I made a reference to a movie like Forrest Gump or something, like some classic movie that you assume everyone has seen.
Right.
Like even if you're 20, your parents were like, you need to see this Forrest Gump.
Right. It's a great film.
Don't get AIDS.
Right.
And, and they're just like, I haven't seen Forrest. I'm sorry. Who's Tom Hanks? Who is he?
I just feel that the problem is, I guess people are dumber than they used to be, but I just think it's that they're oversaturated with useless knowledge. And that there's just so many options now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when we were younger, and I'm older than you, but, you know, we were kind of in the weird way, same generation in that, you know, there was like HBO Showtime, movie theaters. Those are your options.
That was it.
Everybody looked at the same shit.
Yeah, that was it.
Now it's just like Netflix, Amazon. Oh, there's
YouTube.
Like
YouTube. There are some people that just watch YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, they're just like, I don't know who Tom Hanks is, but I know who Logan and Jake Paul are. And you're just like,
Yeah. I know who the cinnamon girl is.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. That lady made a gazillion people probably headlining improvs right now.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Let's not go down that fucking rabbit hole of people. Let's do it. Who's the most ridiculous name you've seen headlining a club?
Nene from the Real Housewives of Atlanta. Nene.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of the.
Leaks? Nene Leaks?
Yeah, Nene Leaks.
And Nene.
Nene Leaks. Yeah.
She's headlining comedy clubs.
She was. She did the Houston Improv, and it was crash and burned.
Yeah.
You know?
But it sold out. I bet.
Sold out. Yeah. And then it was the worst show ever.
Yeah.
And then those people will never come back.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, this is terrible.
You know, and there's like a couple comics. I don't like to speak ill will of comics, but there's a couple comics that I know have some drug problem issues. And I've heard they've done horrible shows. And I feel bad for those guys.
Yeah.
Because they can't get out of their own way. Yeah. And, you know, so I can relate to that. So I feel really bad for them. But Nene Leaks or Nene Leaks or whatever her name
is. I like you call her Nene.
I don't know what it is.
Well, first of all, if you bought her tickets and you saw that show, it's Nene from now on.
Yeah.
Anytime you have to spend money, say Nene.
Well, I
will not do it.
Comedy clubs ruined comedy the first time.
Yeah.
When they just started putting all these guys on, you know, Evening at the Improv. And they're like, we need anybody with five.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at midnight. Literally, at midnight was so funny. Like, there's a couple shows on Comedy Central where, like, they glorify people who should not be glorified.
Well, it's sort of like if you're good on Twitter, we want you on At Midnight. And it's like, yeah, but that's not a person who's, like, a tested writer.
Well, I mean, At Midnight's off air, and I love Chris Hardwick, so God bless him and his Agreed. Empire he's created. You know, good for him. He's a great guy. Every time, you know, it's like one time he saw me at this cafe. And he came up and started talking to me, and he just kept talking and kept talking. And I'm like, does this guy got places to go? I felt so bad that I was like keeping him, but he's that nice of a dude.
Yeah.
But some of the comics he put, it all started with, what's her name? The Chelsea Handler show, right?
Sure.
Chelsea Lately. Chelsea Lately took features and made them headliners, regardless of what you thought about some of them. They went on to headline comedy clubs.
Because of the popularity of the show.
Oh, the popularity of the show. Whereas, like, the Roast Battle, who ran by two of my friends who I love to death, and it's probably one of the best shows on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And At Midnight, they took openers and made them glorified openers.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, those were two weird, like, skill sets that don't translate in the stand-up comedy.
Right.
And it was just like you'd watch people on At Midnight. You're like
being able to come up with a tweet and roasting, right?
Because
like roasting isn't necessarily indicative of somebody being a great comic, and vice versa. I'm sure there are great comics who've gone into roast battle and gotten annihilated, and there are great roasters who get to the road and do 12 minutes and are like,
it doesn't translate at all.
Yeah, it's sort of like the X Games, right? Like the dude who's great at vert can't street skate.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yes, you're both getting laughs.
You're both skaters.
But it when you take away everybody in that room knowing everybody on stage, and you take that away and you go up on, like, the OR, you're going to eat a dog's dick.
Yeah.
Because you got to relate to strangers.
I've seen it. I've seen people, like, be the big swinging dick at Roast Battle on a Tuesday and then go do an OR spot on a Wednesday, and
it doesn't translate.
And just eat,
but
just eat shit.
With that said, it's still a fantastic show.
Yeah.
And Moses is one of the most wonderful people. And Jeffrey Ross is always cool as hell. And, you know, at midnight, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think things like that, any TV show, like you could say the same thing about Last Comic Standing, anything that shines light on what we do is good.
Right.
Where it becomes dangerous is when people think that it doesn't matter how good you are in order to get to do it.
That has been what the whole point of reality television has been.
Yeah.
Is this desire to take away talent.
Yes.
We don't need talent. We just need talking mannequins.
Well, it's funny because, and I don't say this to sound egotistical at all, but it's funny because like when I first started doing my show, which is arguably like semi-scripted reality, right? I was just like, I don't get it. I don't get why people like me. I don't get why they picked me. I don't understand it. But then when I started watching other people do it, I started to go, oh, like they're not engaging. You don't want to keep watching them. They're not drawing you in as a viewer.
Yes.
And then I started being able to break it down to specific mannerisms of like, oh, I do this when I talk to people. Like I'm a real person. I'm genuine. I'm myself. I have the ability to be myself in front of people. And even some of the people that are like the most talented actors can't get into that space.
Yeah, 100%. It is an interesting, it's like not everybody. Like
being yourself is a talent in and of itself. Like being able to just be a normal dude in that environment is a whole different thing.
Yeah, just to be yourself when the camera's on sounds incredibly easy.
It does.
And it's not at all.
It's so hard.
Just something different. I'm just, you know, people always like, oh, do you act? No, I got two emotions, okay? Angry and horny. That's it. So unless you want to, like, a rapey concur. Fucking taxi driver, I you know, a rapey Armenian taxi driver.
I was
driver,
just going to say Armenian.
I got nothing for you.
Yeah.
And it's just real simple shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everything is its own amazing art that takes so long to master it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those things where you don't, it's almost like you don't realize what you do well until you see somebody else that can't do it try to do it.
Yeah.
And that's, and not to be like a negative person, but that helps build your confidence when you start to go, oh, this is why this part of what I'm doing succeeds, is because this is a unique way that I do it and a unique sort of thing about it that I'm doing that other people can't do. And that's, I think that's part of finding your quote unquote voice as a comedian.
You know what's so funny? It's like you could watch something on television and be like, this is awful.
Yeah.
But then you got to think, those are the ones that did it the best.
Yeah.
I was watching this movie the other day, and I don't know what the name was. I go see my dad, and my dad just had surgery, so I had to go see him in Prescott, Arizona. Him and his black girlfriend who used to dance on Soul Train. True story.
Nice.
Yeah, they're both batshit crazy. Like, they can't stop going to Golden Corral. Like, every day is like Golden Corral. And he's like, oh, it's a giant buffet. But, Dad, you're dropping like $20 every time you're going there. But he loves going there. So I go there. And they
made you go to Golden Corral?
And 3 days in a row, we went to Golden Corral.
Did you start to know, like, people by name?
Yeah.
Were you just like, hey, Phil,
I came in
as a prime rib
Sam,
today?
You know? It was like my own Cheers after a while.
Yeah, exactly. Except ODing everybody's got beef in front of them.
I just started ODing on strawberries and chocolate fountains. It was just getting ridiculous.
I used to think I was fat. And then I went on the road with a comic buddy of mine named Daryl Horner out of Minneapolis. And when we got into Golden Corral territory and he started talking about the experience, I was like, oh, I'm like,
you're Hollywood fat.
Yes.
You're Jack Black fat.
I'm like Ethan Hawke in Training Day, where I was just like, I know what it's like. And then I went out with Denzel and he was like, oh, you don't get wet, motherfucker. You ain't never been to a Golden Corral prime rib station. And I was just like, I don't even know what that is. And he was like, motherfucker, you haven't lived yet. And he made me go. And I was just like, he was frolicking through that place like he grew up there, like it was the fucking family business. And I was just like, okay, I guess I'll have a biscuit and tacos and chocolate pudding and prime rib.
So funny, dude. So it's just like, yeah.
Buffets know no restraint either. Like Golden Corral is like, would you like Jell-O with your prime rib today?
It's like John Candy. No, I think Chris Farley changed Hollywood fat.
Yeah.
Because it's my whole theory on why a bunch of studios got together and bought TMZ, because they destroyed Tom Cruise. It's so hard to build a $20 million actor brand.
Yes.
Where if you put them in a movie, you're guaranteed to make 20 mil.
Yeah, like the only guy they've successfully done that with in the last 10 years is The Rock. And Kevin Hart.
Probably. Kevin Hart's that.
Well, I think Kevin Hart did that himself, though. That wasn't really like big studio movies Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart did a lot of
Shaquille O'Neal, and he did the Shaquille O'Neal All Stars, and he was like either the host of it or he did it forever.
Yeah,
and because before that he had a string of failure television shows, and then Kevin Hart,
and then a bunch of like shitty B black movies.
Yeah,
and stuff.
And then just that he did that Shaq thing that just blew up.
Well, that's happened at the same time the Best Man 2 or whatever. I can't remember. He did one of those ensemble movies where he kind of stole the show, but it happened the same time.
That's going to be Tiffany Haddish, in my opinion.
Well, that's what's happening to Tiffany now. She just stole the show in that Girls Trip movie. And dude, she stole the show in Keanu, too.
Yeah.
She was great.
I've been watching that girl since she was like 18 years old.
Yeah.
Like, the first time I saw her, I'm like, you're going to be a star.
Yeah.
And the only thing is, like, it just takes so long to be seen. But anyways, back to
all right, though. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Tom Cruise, right? Tom Cruise, TMZ destroyed Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That video of the Scientology video, the Oprah Winfrey stuff, all that stuff destroyed that brand. He's not a $20 million movie brand. They act like he is.
Yeah.
They're like, Tom Cruise in this movie again. Everyone's like, crazy guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Well, Edge of Tomorrow was probably one of the best movies that came out that year, and it tanked.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you right away, like, what people, unless how it's people have Mission soured
Impossible.
On. And yeah, but people have soured on Tom, is what you're saying.
100%.
Yeah.
So the same thing with fat guys in Hollywood. Like, they build up these dudes, like John Candy, you know, Belushi, Chris Farley. And granted, two of them died from drug overdose. But, you know, they build these dudes up, and then they crash and burn.
Yeah.
And so for the longest time, Jack Black was the fat.
Yeah.
Like that was
how do I get to be the fat? I always thought Philip Seymour Hoffman was the fat. He was the serious fat.
He was the serious fat.
Yeah, he was the drama fat.
The joke fat was Jack Black.
Jack Black.
Just that perfect amount of fat that people were like, oh, wacky fat guy, but not healthy.
Not unhealthy fat.
I'm
teetering on the brink of that.
Now, Billy Gardell and then what's her face? Melissa
McCarthy.
McCarthy. They brought back old fat.
Southern fat, like ripply fat.
Yeah, because somebody apparently in Hollywood took a trip through the middle of the country. Oh God!
Do you know I auditioned for that show?
What?
Mike and Molly?
For the guy?
It was right after I moved here, and I was in there reading for the part of Mike with John Caparulo and Mike Bridenstine and like a bunch of other less fat people. And I literally walked into this audition and they were like, oh, we thought you were like 6'3" and like 3+ bills. And they basically made me feel like I wasn't fat enough. And I was just like, this is the only time I'll ever be told this in Hollywood. I'm just like,
they wanted
morbidly obese. And I didn't know at the time, but it's not like I fucking nailed the audition. I probably ate shit. And I also changed the script around because I thought the writing was like meh. And
that's great. That's what they love.
Yeah. So
give us your interpretation of our hard work.
Well, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't. I don't think they took to that. But my feeling was like, look, if they don't cast me to be in it, maybe they'll let me write on it or something.
Your reading, but it's our fault. The reading sucks. So come back, fix everything.
It's funny that you put it that way because it was, look, I'd been in LA for like 2 weeks at that time.
You totally don't realize everything.
The ego involved in every aspect of it.
And that's why I laugh when I see like guys who've been out here for so long and they just don't change.
Yeah.
And I'm not
saying. They don't adapt.
They just don't realize what they're doing wrong. And this has come from a guy who just does his own thing, so. You know, you could say a lot of stuff about me as well, but it's just funny when you see people who are just so stubborn at one thing that is completely shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And they just don't stop it.
Yeah. It's funny. Like we have I don't know if I should say his name, but we have a mutual friend who is that way. Oh, fuck it. I'll say his name. We'll see.
Will C.
One of those dudes who just can never get out of his own way.
I love it because you wouldn't want Will C. to get pissed off at you and then blackball you in Hollywood.
No, but it is one of those things of like, I'm one of those people like, I know him well enough to where I feel bad that he's not here to defend himself.
Right.
But also fuck him because it's exactly who he is. Like, that is a dude who, no matter what, like we were talking about people that have this thing ingrained in them, like whether it's cultural or whatever, he's one of those people that's like, if there are two of us and there are two cupcakes, I got to figure out how to get that guy's fucking cupcake. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like that is, he's hardwired that way to be like, I need both cupcakes, and whether I got to trick this motherfucker or kill him, I
now
need
he's
both
adopted,
of these cupcakes.
Right?
Yes. Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, it's like, you know, some people can't come back from that initial. And listen, if you were given up for adoption and you've gone on to do amazing things, God bless you. You know, I mean, like, again, Tiffany Haddish, like, what a wonderful story.
I don't know her story. Is she adopted?
Yeah, she was in foster.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, there was also, what's this?
I should just have her on.
She's wonderful. Yeah. I think she's blown up. Who knows what's going to happen? But, you know, it's like she's
too big to do March of the Pigs. I got it, Sam.
Dude, who knows? Who knows? She's probably swimming in NBA dicks right now. You know what I'm saying?
You can swim in those?
Yeah.
Do you lay them flat or do you do them like a teepee or a bundle of sticks?
I don't know, man.
How do you swim in them?
That's just really
what an ironic term. To use for a pile of dicks. He was swimming in NBA dicks. Like, that's probably the one
all over.
That's probably the one activity that guys in the NBA don't particularly like in mass is swimming.
And I don't know, dude. Do you hear the Derrick Rose story?
No.
Yeah, he got accused of rape by this chick because she called him over and him and his friends went over. They all ran a train on her.
Oh.
And it's like, you know why she let him run a train? Because she's trying to make him jealous.
Oh, really?
Like, what weird?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
How does a train make? Because, so you were like, if I make him fuck me with three other guys, he'll hate those three other guys. Was that it? What a weird. This is like, who's making these rules, dude? Like, how are we supposed to know what to do anymore?
It's just chaos, yeah. Dude. It's chaos.
Also, though, like, you have a brain that works in a way where you can overlook four dicks for a mental advantage. Like, you're making four dick chess moves in life. I'm just like, oh, I know it looks like
four dick chess.
Yeah. Four dick chess. She's like, look, I know it looks like four dicks, but it's actually just positioning my queen for checkmate. Like,
it's just the reality. And then it didn't work out. So she accused him of rape. The cops were like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Cops probably reacted like we reacted.
Yeah, we're just like,
playing four dick chess?
Yeah, you're in there playing
four dick. Get out of the police station.
Yeah, ma'am.
And then they sued him. Yeah. Then she sued him and she lost that too. Unbelievable.
Well, it's funny that we live in this world now. I call it like digital scarlet lettering, where people think that they can just like do that. Like accuse somebody of a crime. Let it play out and then not suffer any consequences when it's proven that they're completely wrong. And if you're a guy, like when you remember Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks?
Oh yeah.
He got accused of a thing.
Yeah.
And the female judge was like, this is fucking preposterous, and threw it out. And when the thing happened and it was announced, I was like, listen, let's not accost the guy.
Didn't
he has a right to due process. Yes.
Break in and steal the rape kit?
Yes. Yes. So it was one of those things of to tamper with it, to like intentionally tamper with it.
Oh my God.
But it's one of those things where it's just like, it's like, dude, man, what's going to happen is somebody's going to accuse someone and then they're going to be proven innocent. And then a person who's a fan of the person that was proven innocent is going to kill that person. And that's what it's going to take for people to be like, maybe I should work through the fucking criminal justice system the appropriate way and stay the fuck off Twitter when it comes to accusing people of crimes.
Well, you know, this woman in England right now, I mean, like, you want to talk about old school fat. I mean, this chick, this chick was just a monster. And she just went to jail.
Like old school's like Mama June fat.
That's what we're talking.
Yes, like where your body is sort of a waterfall. Yeah. Not a wonderland, but a waterfall.
100%. And she just went to jail for 10 years for accusing literally anybody that she talked to of rape.
Yeah.
She was, I mean, dude, it's like Ari Shaffir talked about on my podcast, is that there's this one girl who you sang at the Comedy Store. She accused like six people of raping her. At the Comedy Store, like six times.
But like other comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, why would you keep coming back? Like, why? Why would you go back to the rape den after that's two rapes?
That's like people that keep having shitty meals and keep going back to the same restaurant.
Yeah. Like this woman in England.
It's under new management, guys. It'll be.
She took barbed wire to her vagina just to make it look. And then it's like she started. She's like, all these Indians did all this stuff. And they looked at those guys never existed.
Oh, wow. So she was just like a racist person trying to create a narrative.
She was just a weird person. Who wanted attention.
Yeah.
So fucking weird,
I don't even know that we should get into the realm of dissecting people that, again, are making barbed wire to the pussy chess moves.
Yeah.
Four dick and barbed wire pussy
four
chess.
Four dick chess is the best term ever.
That'll be our new thing to each other.
Well, you know, that girl's so interesting out there
playing
that we're talking about this is because I opened for Tiffany Haddish, and I did a joke about white girls with cornrows.
Mm-hmm.
And, because Tiffany's fans are young black women. They mm-hmm. need a hero, and she's their hero, right?
Yeah, Netta and I were just talking about this the other day. Like, when was the last time a young black chick was given this kind of push or even given this kind of opportunity?
If she plays her
cards
right.
And it's taken forever. Yeah.
And doesn't make fun of Jews or gay people.
Yeah.
Literally, that's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Is not make fun of Jews.
You mean don't do the Eddie Griffin.
Yeah. Don't do any of that.
Yeah.
Sky's the limit.
Yeah.
I told her, I pulled her aside, I go, all you have to do is not make fun of Jews and gays and you'll fucking blow
you'll
the
be
fuck
Eddie,
up.
You'll be the next Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Dude, when was there a black Eddie Murphy? Ever. I mean,
female Eddie Murphy.
Female yeah. Eddie Murphy. Right?
When was there a black? I was like, is this a trick question, Sam?
It's four dick chess, brother.
I'm three dicks behind in the moves.
So I did a show for, I did a show with her at
USC.
Four
dick chess and you're five dicks behind me.
and I did a joke about white girls with cornrows. And mostly there's a ton of female, young, black females at the show, and they all went and started clapping and went crazy. Yeah. Crazy. So I just kept saying it. They kept going nuts. Well, this white girl in the front got offended. She goes, well, you know why they don't like white guys? I go, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
But I could tell her feelings were hurt, so I let her have the moment. And I go, why? Because of you? And like the place exploded.
Yeah.
And I just like, I have no clue why you're clapping right now. So then
you're like, if I had that power.
But it's
I'd
just
be playing
like
seven dick chess right now.
So I get that. And I bring up Jamar Neighbors, who's another person who got adopted, who was in the foster care, and his story's amazing.
Yeah.
So I leave the stage. I come back after he's done. I'm starting to get booed. Boo!
Oh, you were hosting it?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I go, why are you guys booing me? Because this girl, you guys hurt this girl's feelings? I go, so anyways, in my act, I did a joke about, you know, like, I don't know why women jog at night, right? Why do you jog at night, ladies? How many seasons of Law and Order do we need before we realize jogging at night is not a good idea?
Maybe it's a daytime activity.
Yeah, it should be done. The point is, people get kidnapped and murdered when they run at night.
Yeah.
That's a hacky serial killer move, okay? Yeah. To run at night. So anyways, out of nowhere, this Asian chick just pops up on my podcast, on my Twitter feed. And she's like, Sam, I just watched the worst comedy ever. Sam Tripoli did a joke like, women, why do you run? I see women running at night. I chase them. Worst joke ever. And then I repeat, you completely butchered a classic.
Yeah.
You fucking butchered it. And then out of nowhere, all these Asian chicks came out of nowhere. Rape is not funny. Rape. Never mentioned the word rape once.
Yeah, yeah.
Never mentioned the word. And now all of a sudden, an army of Hello Kitties are just coming and trying to fucking destroy me. I mean, it's everywhere. And then, of course, my fans fight back and they start going at her. Well, this one hot Asian chick chimes in calling me a rapist. Like, I condone rape.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't condone rape. She goes, well, then tell me the joke. I go, what? She goes, tell me the joke. I go, you're getting offended?
And you don't even know what the joke is.
You don't even know what the joke is.
Right.
Well, she goes, well, tell it to me. I go, that's not the point.
Buy a ticket.
Yeah, buy a fucking ticket. So the worst part is she's kind of hot. So all my fans stop defending me and start hitting on her.
Listen, man. Ain't no allies in four dick chess, Sam.
Ain't no allies in four dick chess.
When the cage door closes, you're on your fucking own, man, when it comes to that. And by cage door, I mean hot Asian pussy.
Yeah.
When the hot Asian pussy cage door closes.
So, but what got me really nervous was that, I'm like, stop hitting on the hot Asian chick. And she's like, you think I'm hot? I'm like, and this happens every time. I get trolled by these young girls. I fight back, and then they end up hitting on me.
They want the D.
They want the four dick chess.
They
want
to play chess.
Yeah, they want to play some chess.
And they don't know that Sam Tripoli's much more of a checkers man.
Forever will be like, I think she wants to play chess.
Yeah, you know? Chick is a, this chick, the fucking Bobby Fischer over here.
So you're attractive, but you're not that hot. You're not stay overnight hot. I'm right. Like, I'd hit it by you, your plan B, and kick you the fuck out the door.
Yeah.
So then this girl who originally started going at me was still going. I go, listen, sweetie, if you notice nobody's talking to you, they're all talking to your hot friend because you're not pretty enough to get a response.
Yeah.
Right? And then she goes, she hits me back. She's like, oh, fuck you. You could. I'm like, listen, sweetie, if you have a boyfriend, he's cheating on you. Because I've been talking to you for 2 minutes and I already want to fuck other people. Right? And she got quiet for everyone for a little while. So then, dude, so then somebody tweets, Sam's sexually harassing young girls right now on Twitter. I'm like, okay, I got to get out. Then someone started fucking going on every post that mentioned my name on Instagram and started putting, Sam Tripoli sexually harasses young girls. And I'm like, okay, lesson learned on that one. You can't really like engage.
Yeah, you just can't engage. It's funny that we're talking about this because this is like a perfect segue into our next thing. We'll take a
quick. Has this been the darkest podcast?
No, not at all.
You've gotten darker than four dick chess?
I don't know. I don't know if we've ever gotten into the realm of chess. We usually don't get that scientific with it, but we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back. Yeah, man. No, this is not the darkest. Well, first of all, I can't say that. Might be the darkest episode of March of the Pigs, but definitely not the darkest podcast episode I've been a part of. I've been on some pretty hardcore conversations and in those situations, like you just described, where they're sort of on the outside, they appear to be can't win situations. Like, you know, no matter how well you defend yourself or how well you think you defend yourself or state your case or try to appeal to people's sense of logic and being rational, there's just this, torch and pitchfork mentality online now where people are like, fucking get them. They don't even, to your point, they don't even care what the cause is. They just want to pile on. And the thing is,
it's
like
pack mentality.
Yeah.
It's like in a dog park, right? If two dogs go at it, other dogs would just jump in.
Yeah.
They don't even know why. Yes. And they'll just sense who's the weaker one and try to kill that weaker one.
Yeah, that's true.
They did that to my dog out of nowhere. This dog just went nuts. And then all the dogs started going nuts. And you got to go in there to a bunch of fucking dogs and grab your dog. And it's just, it's pack mentality.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting. On the last podcast I did with Tony Vinn, we talked about this a little bit about, I have a real problem with the way people react to certain things on the internet because they sort of act like we've been civilized animals for thousands of years. And people forget that at the core, we're still fucking animals. We still have barbaric instincts. And so when you're just like, ugh, that guy didn't hold the door open for me at Yogurtland. It's just like fucking 100 years ago, that guy would have punched you in the face and stolen everything you owned and had sex with your dead body.
Yeah.
Like we were cavemen, but fucking 300-400 years ago.
Right.
Barbarians.
But you're mad he's not holding the door open for you, but you're the first one to bitch about fucking, you know, feminist rights and all that.
It's sure.
Like you can't have both sides, but going back to your point.
Yeah, but it is that thing of like, we feel there's almost like this pearl clutcher mentality about like we're supposed to be Victorian fucking France.
Right.
Where we're supposed to be like, good day, day to you, sir.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Like, and everything's a dance.
Yes, and it's just like, that's not the fucking world. You can't have Here Comes Honey Boo Boo and that shit.
No, 100%.
You don't get the UFC.
I can't agree more.
And fucking good day to you, madam. You don't get that. And so we live in this weird fucking middle ground. And I thought of this thing the other day. You have those things where you're like in the shower, wherever you go to think, where you start to process your philosophies on the world. Like, everything about when I write new material comes from this concept of like, what is the theme of what I want to talk about? And one of the things I was thinking about the other day as I was working through my writing process was, before law, there was only violence. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, I would tell you there's still violence.
I agree.
It's just, but we live in a bubble right now.
But we, society, needed violence to become what it is today. So, like, it was only through bloodshed and war and violence and murder that we have what we have today. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. where people look at each other on the street and go, like, we needed the old West where a guy shot you for looking at his woman to be where we are today.
Well, that's the whole thing. Now, yeah. Yeah. It's 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, because if that never happened, we'd just be out here talking shit and murdering each other with rocks. So it's sort of like, I have a problem when people don't have respect for the journey of human civilization to be where we are today.
Yeah. And they don't respect the hit. Yeah. You're right. The history to get to this moment, yeah, and the discount of the history.
Well, because of technology and this instant gratification society, we feel like we should be through evolution today. Yeah. Like, people think we should be 100% evolved right now. Why can't we? Like, it's a choice. Like, it's a choice to evolve. And it's funny that people treat men this way, particularly because if you were to say, well, it's a choice to be an impoverished, low income society and neighborhood, people will go, you're a fucking xenophobe and a racist and a nationalist. And so to say that the status of human evolution that we are in right now is a choice is dismissive. It's dismissive of the process and the people that have had to die for us to be here.
That's the whole thing with this, you know, this anti-white guy shit right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's like this whole thing that, like, white guys are the most evil fucking dudes in the world. And you watch the way Hollywood operates. It is literally the worst business model ever.
Well, did you ever hear Matthew Broussard's joke he was doing a couple years ago? He talked about the fact that, like, if he wanted to be on TV, he's like a good-looking white guy who looks like every bad guy in every 80s
100%.
Movie. And he was like, if I want to get on TV now, I need to be some kind of sassy, transgendered Muslim girl.
Yeah.
And it was just like, but it's hilarious, but it's true.
But, well, it's why nobody's watching television right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the numbers that they're putting up, it's like the greatest show on TV right now is Game of Thrones. That's getting 30 mil, right? Yeah. An episode. Nothing else is. Nothing's even close to that.
There's nothing, even on network. Like, that's a subscription model show getting 30 million.
Yeah.
And that's not including the 7 billion pirated views.
Tell me that show, as much as it's fantasy and you call it nerd shit, but when you really look at that, to what you were just talking about, that history's been built on bloodshed. Like, that is knuckle-dragging shit right there.
Sure.
With fucking dragons and White Walkers, right? Okay? Like, and everyone gravitates to that.
Sure.
You're not demonizing anybody. There's no group that's more demonized than anybody else. And that's why people are watching it, okay? But when you have other shows, like, I love Jennifer Lawrence. Like, that picture of her getting man sauce all over her face, as much as I don't enjoy the flappening or whatever that was called, I won't look at that stuff, but someone's like, you gotta look at this picture.
Yeah.
And it's her just fucking Christmas caked. I respect
is that the terminology, Christmas cake?
Well, I just said that.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I meant birthday cake, but I combined.
I feel like if you and I did a podcast every week for the next year, we'd have the best t-shirt business in the entire fucking world.
Poor Dick Chess and
Christmas caked.
You know, and she just fucking lit up.
Listen, if a girl has that on her face, it feels like Christmas. No matter where you're at in the room, so that's Christmas.
She just put out this thing where she's like, I don't want Trump supporters to come to my movies. I just don't get, like, the business model that is.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense to me.
Why?
Well, to immediately be, well, but you know, it goes back to a thing I like to say all the time that like, I said this about the, all the Hurricane Harvey giving is like, you know, it's, I saw this girl on Instagram was like, hey, if you guys help me win this Maxim's Finest, I'm going to give like 20%. I'm gonna give $5,000 of it to the Harvey victims. And people are like, yes, bro, it's like really fucked up that you're like making people let you win this thing just to give. And she's like, it's the only way I can do it. It's the only way I can be charitable. I don't have that money.
Yeah.
And so like when people are just like, if you like this, just don't come to my shit. It's like, boy, that would be nice. It would be nice to be in a financial place where you could just start deselecting people of society to participate in your business model.
And I love how they pick and choose what is evil, meaning we're like this stuff that Trump's doing, which is wrong. There's all this, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you and I are both, and we should probably state this for our listeners. Like, my people know I'm a staunch libertarian. I'm like a guy who is about small government, taking power away from the government, and not about picking these this fucking oligarchy system we have.
I'm Boba Fett, dog. I'm a lone assassin. So I have no master, and I choose like to just look at like I won't get into the fucking two-party system.
Right.
I fucking can't stand it. And you know, you got these fucking elitists in this Hollywood trying to act like they're all like they're all for the little people. When they're just all part of the fucking system too.
Sure.
And they only look at what Trump's doing shitty, which is a lot of stuff, but they don't want to even look close to what Obama did shitty or what the Clintons did. There's an argument that what the Clintons did was the most fucking devastating shit to this country, but no one ever wants to talk because they got D by their name.
Well, here's the interesting thing about that. What I was getting to put a point on what I was rambling about earlier.
Did I cut you off?
No, podcast? No, not at all. Not at all.
I'll give you some Christmas.
Cause cake. I'm, it's all ice. It's 100% icing. Just so you know, Christmas cake,
no cake, all icing.
Christmas cake, 100% icing. It's buttercream. No. So I'm just being ADD. To put a point on what I was saying earlier, to allow yourself to be politically aligned only with the positive social aspects of society is a privilege of the wealthy. Like, I can't care about some of those things because I have to figure out where rent is coming from this month. Do you know what I mean? So like, in some capacity, that is the disconnect between what people call the Hollywood elite or the extreme left, is that the rest of the country is clocking the fuck in and out every day.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people in Hollywood that just, they can't relate to that. They don't understand it. They think they're better than it. They think they're above it. And that is why those people don't want you. And I'll tell you what, those are the people I want. No amount of success will ever stop me from respecting that section of our society, because guess what? When those people, like, to me, the day those people stop showing up for the rest of America, you're just going to have celebrities at Starbucks going like, does anybody work here?
Yeah.
Is anybody who's doing this coffee? Yeah. Where the fuck is coffee?
Yeah.
Also, who's going to wash my car? Like,
one.
It's just like
100%.
And they don't understand, because 90% of them have like an assistant that they pay fucking below wage. They pay like $30,000 a year under the table to some kid who wants to be an actor or wants to be a producer or a director or a comedian. And they pay them a fucking shit wage to be their liaison to the world.
Yes.
To go like, I don't want to know what it's like to be Mexican, work at Chipotle. So when I want Chipotle, you go get it for me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so that they are so disconnected from the world.
I couldn't
That's
agree more.
Why I will never have an assistant, no matter how rich I get, because there is a groundedness that comes with having to get your own fucking coffee.
Yep.
You have to interface with that side of society or you end up in that bubble.
The fact that Hollywood, half these people in Hollywood have never been part of the South, the Midwest, there's a disconnect going on, dude. And you're putting out.
Well, and you gotta specify about when you say Hollywood too, because it's a specific sector of Hollywood, right? There are people that work in our industry and our business that are grounded, that are, you know, that do have a perspective of the world and are from other places and aren't institutionalized by what Hollywood has become.
I would take what Hollywood's saying about Trump serious if they didn't just greenlight everything Obama did.
Yeah,
like to go from 2 to 5 wars and get no congressional approval of that, to expand the surveillance to the largest surveillance system of Americans in the history of this country, to do a drone strike the fuck out of everybody with a 90% inaccurate targeting. To just sit there and not say that that is, it is horrible.
Yeah.
But then just to flip the fuck out when he bans trans from the military, that hasn't even been implemented yet.
Yeah.
And most likely will be thrown out when a ban that really affects, let's be honest, this is new people joining the military. How many people does that affect? 200-300 people? It's not that much. To flip the
Did you watch Tommy Lahren debate Chelsea Handler on that?
I can't take it.
Yeah. But I'm saying, but if you watch Tommy Lahren, she destroyed Chelsea Handler.
Tommy Lahren's just an interesting person because she's literally 22 years old.
Yeah.
Right out of the womb.
And South Dakota.
Been given Bible everything belt. In life. When the moment she had peach fuzz on her snatch, people have been trying to make her comfortable and happy.
Yeah.
And like she gets right out of college, she gets this fucking gig, and now she's telling everybody how the world fucking works.
Sure.
And it's like this debate's like, I really want to know, where have you been in the world, Tommy Lahren? Where have you been?
Well, the interesting thing that came out in that debate was she's still on her parents' insurance. So if that gives you perspective.
Yeah.
To answer your question, like, where have you been?
I'm
still on my parents' insurance because I'm under 25. Like, ugh.
And then you're telling
so you're talking about how insurance should work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're completely abusing this fucking system. And dude, it's like,
that's like in my family, I have a stepsister who is like super racist towards anyone that's not white. She's like, y'all just milking a system. I go, you have three fucking children at home and you are defrauding welfare to get more money. Like,
can you believe that?
Like, you so how can you
hypocrisy
say that that's
oh it's a should be then it a is, fucking crime
it is the national anthem. Hypocrisy is the national pastime in
it's
this country,
unbelievable
for
I
sure.
talk about that on stage. It's like, dude, if you're a Republican and you're trying to outlaw everything gay and you get caught sucking trucker dicks, there should be some serious form of fucking like punishment for that. Like, you should have to blow everybody in the middle of a fucking Times Square or some shit like that.
Oh, I like that mass. It's like the mass execution, but instead of being drawn and quartered in front of everybody, you gotta blow everybody.
Yeah.
You gotta blow the whole, how many do you think if it were Hollywood Bowl, how many layers of seats do you think you could get through before you were just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I got no more.
Well, you know what's so funny,
I can't
dude,
take another dick.
Is it would start as a punishment and then this guy would just get in the zone.
You would get in the zone.
He was just this is the worst. That one
taste
of dick
really
and he's
good
like, oh, this is, and they're cheering me on.
And they're cheering me. Everybody wants to be in an arena. That's you know? Well, listen, I don't want to suck dicks, but if I have to, I'm going to be the fucking like Brock Lesnar of it.
The problem is we don't know anybody's stats when they're telling me stories. You know,
totally.
It's like Ice Cube, NWA and all this shit. And then you find out like he grew up in a two-parent home and went to a private school. And he like found a glitch in the system that he could try to relate to, you know, everybody from the ghetto when he wasn't from the ghetto. And I'm not saying if you're black, that doesn't mean you don't feel any racism, you know, if you're rich black.
Yeah, it's not a force field.
Yeah. But it's still like to act like you're like, you know, you came from this impoverishment and then you're like, you're fighting the system is like, it's kind of like a real, like, not a lie, but it's like a little white lie.
Yeah.
Or a little black lie, whatever you want to say.
Yeah,
it is,
yeah,
you
sure.
know. So I just.
But it is, it's exploitative. And you're basically highlighting that you can exploit the guilt in American culture.
100%.
No matter where you come from.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But back to the Tommy Lahren versus Chelsea Handler, you know, it's just like these are two chicks going fucking at it and they're just arguing and they're both from fucking, like, they both have lived privileged lives. I know Chelsea came from New Jersey, didn't have it, but at some point it changed.
Yes.
And like how she got her opportunity, I'm not really going to get into that because.
Well, you go way back with her, right?
Well,
like you've known her for a long time.
I've known her for a while and she was the first of my friends who like blew up and then acted like she didn't know me.
Yeah.
So I always had my feelings hurt. And, you know, now it's just like, well, that's just part of the gig.
Sure.
You know, that's just what happens in this town. People blow up and then they don't want to ever remember where they're from.
Right.
So
yeah. What is, that's an interesting thing to me of just like this, like, how do you, it's so great because we're segueing perfectly into the next thing I want to talk about. But it is true to be like, how does that pendulum go all the way around? You know what I mean? Like a pendulum is meant to swing from one side to the next. And somehow with people in entertainment or athletics or whatever, the motherfucker goes all the way around and resets. And it's like, it forgets the trajectory. And I don't understand, like, how could you do that to someone you know and be like, go home and look in the mirror and not go, you're a piece of shit.
I don't know. There's just some people that don't want to remember where they're from.
Do you think it's because they didn't feel like they ever belonged to it? Do you know what I mean? Like, I guess, and to some degree, I can understand it with comedy because comedy is very cliquish. And if somebody didn't really feel like part of that club, maybe they act like they weren't part of it. But,
I mean, I've known comics who, like, I'm not going to say their name, who, like, were part of the group, blew up, and then you don't see them around anymore.
Right.
And everything they do is very, like, calculated. And I get that. And, you know, I've seen people blow up, and the comedy scene has a weird reaction to it, and that causes them to kind of, like, have their feelings hurt.
Yeah, because the people act like they don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. You know, yeah. I was having a conversation about, you know, this one network gave this young comedian a special very early, and a lot of people thought it was too early, and it may have been too early. But what are you going to say when a network's like, we want to shoot your special?
I know.
What are you going to be like?
I know who you're talking about.
No?
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
Also, too, like, they may never come back.
Yeah.
Like, and that is the thing. That's the only thing in the comedy community I wish we were all more honest about is, we're all terrified that we'll wake up tomorrow and that'll be the last day the phone ever rings. So like, let's all cut the shit. Like I have a show right now and people tell me like, oh man, you're set. You're good. Like you're there now. And it's like, dude, I'm going to go back to driving Uber next week to put money away because I'm looking at the clock and going, there may not be another check.
Dude, I had a TV show 10 years ago. And since then it's been just a series of just trying to get shit back on television.
Right.
Just like, it's so fucking hard. Dude.
It's not even like you're not good or you're not relevant or you're not a fucking killer. Like I watched you close that show at the Ice House and I was like, this motherfucker's slaying the same way you were 10 years ago. and it's one of those things where it's like, it's just because there's so much now. There's so much. And the problem is that I think a lot of executives and executives in the world I work in too are guilty of this. There's so many choices that now they overthink it to the point of where they're like, what's the most we can do with this 30 minutes of airtime?
Well, you know,
it's not just like Sam's great. Sam's funny. He's got good ideas. He likes conspiracies. He's the ultimate skeptic. Like he should do a political show. They're just like, but how many political shows are we going to do? And we have a white guy. What if we had an Asian woman who doesn't speak English? What would that do? It's just like, it's like this fucked up think tank. It's like this thing of like, they overthink it instead of just being like, it goes back to what I said about like, why do people like ginormous food? But they just like watching me. I can't explain it. And it's not like that. It's just like, there's a thing about, there's people that come on TV and you go, oh, I'll watch this guy. And there's people that come on TV and you go, even of all the things that I'm supposed to like about him, I just don't really want to watch him.
I totally agree with you. And there's also something about comic. They are very afraid of comics who have opinions.
Oh,
because
sure.
Comedy, for some reason, is... We are literally the last line of defense when it comes to freedom of expression.
Yeah.
I don't say freedom of speech because freedom of speech is more about, you know, criticizing government and being thrown in jail for that.
Yeah.
Which is like
freedom of the press.
They're trying to pass a bill now with like, if you call for a boycott of Israel, you could be thrown in jail for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And a $250,000 fine. That is literally
in this country.
In this country.
Wow.
That is literally a violation of freedom of speech. When you hear people cry about free speech.
Sure.
And like, that is literally.
And the problem with that is the subjectivity of it, of somebody being like, so you could literally just go, hey, like in this whole Middle Eastern conflict between Israel and Palestine, what's Israel's role? And they go, That sounds like criticism.
Yeah.
Put him in jail.
If you go, hey, man, we shouldn't boycott. We should boycott Israel because it's an apartheid. They could go, you've just said that. We could throw you in jail for 20 years. So you could probably kill an Israeli and get 15, or you could call for a boycott and get 20. It just makes no sense at all.
It's crazy. Like, I have tons of
Israeli friends. It's not about the people. It's just like there's a deep state, just like in this country, and it's making shitty decisions in the world. But back to the point of freedom of expression, it's like we are the last form of real freedom of expression. Like, you know, and we were having lunch. You said you had put out a tweet or something and someone went a little crazy on you. I forget the exact conversation was. And I had said that, like, if you were a rapper, they would just be like, oh, hell yeah, he's crazy. MC, you know, MC Redhead, he don't pull no punches.
Right, yeah.
But because you're a comedian.
I came out and somebody was like, somebody was doing the thing I hate the most in the entire world, being passive aggressive. I'm the kind of person that, like, and maybe to a fault, but like if somebody is being passive aggressive on my set, no matter who it is, I will pull that person aside and go, knock it the fuck off. Like, I just won't tolerate it. Yeah. I will not work in that environment.
I'm so with you.
Say what you want. Like, listen, and by the way, because I respect you, don't pull punches
right.
with me.
Right.
Tell me exactly what the fuck you think. I will not fight you. If I think you're wrong, we'll discuss it. But like, you're disrespecting my maturity when you pretend that I can't handle what you have to say to me.
I couldn't agree more.
What happened was,
real quick, I just want to say this real quick, and then we'll get it, because this is a great Twitter beef, is that for some reason the comedy community, because we're just so honest and it's this last form of real freedom of expression, is that we've gotten so far away from what the rest of entertainment's doing, which is train wreck promotion.
Yes.
Promote through being a complete another, say the most outrageous, crazy, dumb shit you can, so that as many, the LeVar Ball way of, and
yes,
and let's admit, big he's baller. The most genius idiot you've ever met in your life. Like, pure idiot.
He's a guy who understands the mechanism. You don't have to be a genius to understand how the mechanism works. He knows it's a trigger. It's a pull of a button.
Right.
You guys are acting like it's like manipulating the general public's perception of you as a fucking Rube Goldberg machine.
Yep.
It's not.
Yep.
It's a trigger. There's a reason we use the word triggered, because it's all it takes is,
Yeah.
And
you're off and running.
And LeVar Ball is a great example of, like, I know he's pro wrestling. He has pro wrestling come to the mainstream of sports and entertainment. And he's going, I'm going to take all the shit these motherfuckers do to rile people up. Guess what? They sell it and they're not even really fighting. So imagine if I brought that logic to real sports and started shit talking and bragging about the things that my sons can do and see what happens. And people are like, he's going to charge $500 a shoe. I mean, I'm going to buy it, but fuck that motherfucker. It's just,
you know,
like,
what he actually
he's
did?
So smart.
He actually was smarter. He charged $500 a shoe. People went to the website just to see the shoe, realized I'm not spending $500 a shoe, saw a $20 hat, bought the $20 hat.
Right.
It's really fucking smart.
Right.
You know, but that can happen.
So you're still getting 100% conversion on the clicks, but you're doing it at a $20 price point.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, what if a motherfucker never made shoes?
Yeah.
What if he only made hats?
Yeah.
Right?
That's totally what's going on. He's doing it with his younger kid. But, you know, but because you're a comic, and in particular a white male comic,
right?
Like,
not a good time.
They
for us.
Can't run, which is so fucking weird.
Which is fine. Well, but I'm fine with it because we'll come back.
Well, you know,
we've
what
always
I've
come back.
I've been in Hollywood for 15, 16, 17 years, something around that, and like every 4 years, a new cycle comes through.
Yeah.
When I got here, it was nerds. Everything was nerd.
Yeah,
you couldn't. And then
when was that? 2005?
I'd say like early 2000s.
Okay.
And that was a long run too. That was like 5 years, 6 years, seven, and they still try to do it, but they don't paint it as nerd like they used to.
Right.
Like, because they really like all these fucking nerd writers are like, nerds are cool, so we'll do like nerd shit. And then like this nerd dating this way hot fucking chick. And like, I've always felt like, television is the most interesting thing in the world because it puts people in your living room that normally you wouldn't allow into your living room. And like
that's a great way to put it. Like, that's a really great way to put
it.
Mostly because I'll eat all your food.
Yeah. You will see it, huh?
Yeah.
Sports, that's why sports was so important to civil rights, because it put black males in your living room.
Yeah.
You were watching these guys for your team in your living room. Suddenly, they were like part of your life.
Yes.
So this is an important thing. And that's why you've seen a big push for like the gay movement on television. It puts gay people in your fucking living room where you're like, okay, like my mom, she couldn't be more pro-gay now, which is a very interesting thing because she's very conservative. She's always been a liberal, but she's like more conservative side, but totally open-minded. And that comes through watching television.
Yeah, through watching understanding.
The E! Channel and just realizing people are fucking people.
Right.
Right? But every year, every like 6 years, Hollywood goes through a new thing. So it started out
nerds.
As nerds, and that bombed. Then it went to female comedy, and there's still a couple female and there's still a little push, but that cycle bombed. Yeah. Okay. So now we're into ethnic. Yeah. Everything's ethnic. You might even want to go back to, you know, black comedy. Like, cause when they talk about diversity on television, what do they talk about? Black people,
right.
You know? So you got the black thing, and that's out of all the cycles, that's doing the best.
Yeah.
Because it's more relatable because we grew up through music and it's very much relatable.
Well, and I grew up with black comedy. Like, I don't know if you remember this, but I started like before we crossed paths in the mid 2000s, I was doing all black rooms. And I was like, I was literally that white comic that would wear the Sean John velour tracksuit with the fucking pant leg pulled up. But it was because I learned very early on in comedy that regardless of what I wanted to talk about as a comedian, the interesting thing about me was that I had a mom who dated a black guy when I was young in a part of the world where that really didn't happen a lot. So I was this unassuming
freckle-faced
white kid. No, but it was like a freckle-faced white kid who just had perspective on black culture. And the funny thing was like growing up, that relationship was me arguing with my father about, he would tell me black people do this shit. And then I would go spend time with black people and be like, they don't do this shit. And then he would be like, but what about this shit? And I'm like, oh yeah, they do that shit. And so it was like this constant give and take of like, the stereotypes aren't true, Dad. And he's like, what about these stereotypes? I'm like, fuck, you're right. They do 3 out of 5.
Some stereotypes are there for a reason.
So very much like my feeling about race growing up was just like, God damn it. I want to help you guys, but you're 3 out of 5. I can't, you guys are fucking killing me.
Well, I've always said this is that everybody should have to work at Denny's for 2 years out of high school and you could fucking talk about anything.
Anything.
Because when I was talking about doing Tiffany Haddish's show, it wasn't just a college show. It was first day freshmen who have no clue about fucking life. All they know is what MTV has told them.
Sure. Yeah.
And MTV, even though nobody watches it, there's still some high school kids that watch it. And it's just like, oh, everybody's a press, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, so they don't know anything yet. And
right.
So it's like you need perspective and that everybody, like everybody's full of shit and it's just fun. And just because you do a joke about someone doesn't mean you don't like them.
Right.
So back to the Twitter war. You got into this Twitter war.
But this was a great, we started talking about this. It was started with passive aggressiveness. So,
yeah.
So my show started about a year ago, Ginormous Food.
Congratulations.
I don't think
anyone realizes how hard it is to get a show on TV.
Yeah.
When they see how many channels there are and such crap on television, they still don't understand that it's almost impossible to get something on television.
To get it on, to get it picked up, to get it renewed. Like, trust me, I am very appreciative of the difficulty of that. Like, I listened to a guy like Bert who mentioned on his podcast one time that he did 30-something pilots before he ever had something go to series. And my first fucking pilot went to series. And we've done 24 episodes in a year. Like, I can't be upset about that. No matter anything that happens, right?
Right.
Which is astronomical success. But with that, there's an interesting dynamic shift that happens. Because what happens is you realize that there are people out there that you admire and look up to, or did, that are now seeing you as a threat to them. And I'm just this fucking fresh-faced kid in the
You're
space
just
going like,
survive.
I'm just going like, oh, this is super. It's cool to be a part of this, guys.
Right,
thanks
right,
for letting me in.
Right.
And then there are people that are like, this motherfucker's trying to take everything I want. And so one of those people is Adam Richman. Now, what happened was from the time my show started, naturally, there are always going to be comparisons, right? So, like, if you do a special, everyone's going to compare your special to other comedy specials. Right. If you're a female, they're going to compare you to Amy Schumer. If you're a guy, they're going to compare you to Louis C.K. If you're black, they're going to compare you to Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle. The minute my show came out, people started drawing comparisons to Adam Richman, Guy Fieri, all the people in the space. And the difference with Adam Richman comparisons was anytime anybody had anything negative to say about me, Adam would actually go in and like their comments, whether he was tagged or not. Which is a really petty thing for somebody who's been in the space for 15 years, is certainly accomplished, and it's a strange thing to see. And usually, like, I had this conversation with my girlfriend yesterday where I was just like, she's like, just let it go. And I go, it's different. It's different from being some random troll versus somebody who's like, it would be like if you started having great sets at the store and Louis C.K. started shit talking you on Twitter. There's a psychological shift where you go, what the fuck is he talking about me for?
I've gone through that in comedy, not to derail it.
But with people that are bigger than you. Yeah.
Did that to me.
So it's just like, motherfucker, you're at the top. What do you give a shit about what I'm doing?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
You know what I mean? It's like, and I was unaware that happened, but that would be a perfect example. So it's happened for a year. And when the new Man vs. Food came out, Adam played like, they never talked to me about this. They never told me about it. The network just fucked me. He made it out like, oh, they fucked me on this. So he was trashing the new host of that show on his Twitter feed too.
Now, did he create the show?
No.
So he's not the creator?
No.
So this is kind of something that Ben Bailey was going through.
With Cash Cab.
Cash Cab. And right. that they're doing a show and they were going to get a new host. And he's like, yes. I want to host it. And then
and they're just like, no.
Yeah, but didn't Adam not want to host it? Wasn't that the whole thing? Like, it was he's getting so unhealthy.
So here's the thing. Adam claims that that is not the case, okay? But I distinctly remember there being discussion about it. Based on what I know, here's how I think it went down. I think at some point there was a dispute over money. I think at some point there was a dispute over being a producer, wanting total control over the show, having that level. And I do know that in this space, the people at my network and at networks like mine that make shows like mine, that they think, like, there are people probably at Food that think if we just put a new person in Guy Fieri's spot, it'll still do the numbers.
That's what we call Hollywood.
Yes. There's a theory that it doesn't matter who the placeholder is. Now, what I will say is the one guy who's been the Teflon Don that way is Guy Fieri, because every time something else on the network fails, they go back to him and they go, dude, we need you to come up with a fucking show because you're the only guy we can count. He's the only bankable star. Him and Bobby Flay are the only truly bankable stars on that network. By the way, I got to do Bobby Flay's show, met him. He's a fucking great guy. He's a guy who I went in very humble and was like, hey, man, like, I'm just happy to be a part of this thing and everything else. I'm nervous about my show. I don't know if we're going to come back. And Bobby Flay's response was, be stupid for them to not bring you back. You got a great thing going. Your show's entertaining. You're a fun guy. And he's like, we need that on the network because a rising tide lifts all ships. So this is a guy who's still working, who has like 5 hours of the week dedicated to him. Who could go, fuck you, every half hour on the air that you get is a half hour I don't get. And he's like, dude, he said to me, he goes, people aren't going to watch me for 10 more years. We need new people on the network. We need new blood. We need new faces. You're good for us.
Yes.
You'll be back.
There's an old saying that, and I forget it. I want to say Jamie Foxx was telling the story, but it's about how somebody said, it's really lonely at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, well, then pull some people up.
Yes.
You know, and that is what I will tell you about Paul Mooney and to Rodney Dangerfield. And the modern day version of that is Joe Rogan, who pulls people up.
Yes.
And that's the whole groups rise.
Yeah.
And like you can, and that's what like, Carlos Mencia and Dane Cook never realized about comedy. It's like, it's not about, we're not Highlanders.
Look, Kevin Hart's doing it.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart's pulling people up and giving them opportunities and fast-tracking the people that he picks.
Yes.
So with the Adam thing, the opposite of Bobby Flay's treatment, just throwing shade from the corner of the room. And, you know, the other day it happened again and I just got sick of it. I just go, look, man, it's okay if people don't like me, but for you to sit back and to like co-sign on other people's negativity makes you a fucking coward. And yeah. I didn't say fucking, but I felt it.
Did you say
it makes,
coward?
I said it makes you a coward. Yeah. You're a coward.
You should have said fucking.
I should have. You only have so many characters, man.
Yeah.
So I said, it makes you a coward. So then people started freaking out and being like, "What? Where's this coming from? What is this about?" And I go, like, the dude has been jumping in every negative mention of my show for a year and like shitting on my stuff off to the side, like not even having the balls to just be like, everybody trying to do what I do. Fuck that. Nope. Just like letting other people talk for you and co-signing on it like a coward.
Yep.
And so I go, look, I'm just calling it out. Like, you guys compare me to this guy. The difference is, like, I might have a show similar to what he's doing, but I want you to know he's not a man, and I'm a fucking man. And and so...
I'm a man!
I'm a man! I play four-dick chess, motherfucker. So...
That's the caveman in you coming out.
It is. It is the it is that part of me that just like, I won't tolerate passive aggressiveness. Like, I come out of the business world. I was in corporate America from the time I was 19 years old. I had people get in my face and tell me what the fuck I didn't know. And I grew and I became a man.
I'm the same way, dude. Let's deal with this shit.
Yes. So it's like, and I also have the confidence that through difficulty, we all become stronger. At the end of it, I said, look, I've been to 6 restaurants and nobody's had anything nice to say about this guy. And then he gets back to me a couple hours later and goes, I called four. First of all, it was 4 restaurants. It's like, okay, man, well, 2 of them haven't aired yet, so you don't know. And he goes, I called all the restaurants and they all said it wasn't true. And I just go, first of all, this was 10 years ago.
Oh, my God.
You were at these restaurants a decade ago. Okay. Second of all, everybody was in. Everybody you worked with 10 years ago was in today in this 2-hour window, not working and free to speak.
Oh.
And then also, what kind of person fucking has to check their own references on whether or not they were a good person?
Oh.
Like, so you're not sane. If you even picked up the phone and called 4 places you visited and said, hey, was I a shithead 10 years ago? You're not a right person.
Oh.
You're fucked in the head. And so it's like, and it's not like I said that they said he was a horrible person, that he was rude or whatever. They did say he was a little entitled and he was kind of a prick.
Yeah.
He walked into these restaurants. One of them, they were like, he refused to be around regular people. We needed to sequester a part of the restaurant for him to be alone in so that he could put himself in character. It's like, okay, like, you know what I do when we're not filming? I go out and talk to families and kids and the people that watch our show because I don't think I'm fucking better than that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so there is a huge separation in who we are as people and how we view what we do. Adam, from the minute he started doing Man vs. Food, and I'll say this, based off everything I know from people in the industry, from people that have met the guy, from people that have talked to him, he's a Yale drama student who thought he was going to be a huge actor and ended up doing reality television on Food Network.
I was going to say that.
Huge,
that's what I've heard.
So for him, a huge disappointment for where he thought he was going to be in life. And his resentment towards the people show that. I'm a dude who genuinely loves food, loves eating, loves shooting the shit with people. And this, to me, was my dream job. When I saw Adam Richman doing it in 2007, I was like, fuck, that's a great job. And when they offered me the opportunity to do something like it, I was like, this can't be real. Imagine that I would get the chance to do something like this.
They always say, don't meet your heroes, man.
But it is a classic example of that. It's a classic example of like, don't meet your heroes.
Well, at the end of the day, dude.
And so what happened is regardless of whether or not he went to the network and bitched to the right people.
Right.
Or his people did that for him, or just the network freaked out. Certain people called my producers and were like, he needs to take all that down and shut it down or else we're going to shut you down.
They don't understand. Like, that's the best promotion ever.
Sure.
Dude, the Food Network needs a Biggie Small Tupac feud. It was the best thing to happen to both of you. We should be calling, like, fucking every website, the BuzzFeed, and just show them the tweets.
Yeah.
Well, guys who eat fat food are fighting. Going at it.
Yeah, well, the problem
that
is...
That guy's fighting.
The problem is he wouldn't go at it. He would talk to people commenting about it, but he wouldn't directly address it because that's what cowards do.
That is beta male shit. I don't know the
it
guy.
It is, yeah.
You're my friend, I don't know him either. So I would always defend you to him.
I don't know the guy either, but something tells me that if we saw each other in public, he would duck his head and walk the other direction.
I know I've said it 1,000 times. 100%, yeah. Dude. I wouldn't believe... Hey, dude. Hey, man. You should be going after all of them. Go after Guy Ferretti. Go after all of them.
Do them,
you
get
should
them
be the bad listen, boy of cooking. Yeah.
I'll just be the Suge Knight of sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. He put the Suge in Suge Knight.
Yeah, I'll be that guy. I'll be the Suge Knight wrong with that, dude. Of the food.
Hey, I heard that he didn't want to do, you know, at some point he stopped eating on the show. Like he wasn't eating?
Yeah, he was doing the Man vs. Food Nation where other people were doing the challenges. Yeah,
which let me know he didn't want to eat anymore, and that's not the show. So I don't have anything. I don't know the guy personally. I wish him nothing but love and success, but it sounds like bitterness. You know, it's like, where do you go from that?
Well, and the thing too is like, I think part of it is I come from the world of comedy where if I was behaving that way towards another comedian, you guys would call me out on it. Well, you guys would go, what the fuck, dude? Like that, that's sour grapes. You're being a shithead.
There's a real famous story, not famous, but to me
in the comedy
famous.
Community.
Well, about how I got called out by this old comedian that I was doing one of his bits, and it just happened to be after when I didn't really understand comedy, and we had done a gig together in PB, and I buried him. I was the feature, and I buried him. And I wasn't trying to bury him. I just wanted to show him how good I was.
I feel like the more you're talking about this, the more it's coming back to me. But I don't remember the situation, but I remember this happening.
But I buried this guy, and he was a hero of mine, you know? So then later on, like a couple days later, I was at the Comedy Store, and the manager at the time, and I'm not going to say his name, but the manager at the time pulled me aside. He goes, hey, you have to stop doing this bit about a stripper in a wheelchair. And I go, why? He goes, because this comic said it's his bit, and you're doing his bit. And I laughed. I thought he was joking. He goes, no, I'm being serious. I go, did he call you? He goes, yeah. He goes, why didn't he call me? He goes, because I don't know, but you got to stop doing the bit. I go, no, I'm never going to stop doing the bit. And I went and got his number. I called him, and we didn't hash it out, but we had words.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, he basically said that you're a bigger man than I am. By dude. If you got beef, man, I've been in 12-step programs, man, for a very long time.
Sure, yeah.
I'm all
I grew
about.
Up, by the way, I grew up around them. That's why I don't drink, because everyone in my family has been through the program.
Oh, yeah. Are you Irish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Both sides.
So it's like I'm so used to dealing with resentments or me feeling like someone's got resentment against me and being like, what's going on? Let's talk about it. Are you mad at me? I'm all about that. So I don't know why this guy is trying to piss on your parade. Sound to me like he didn't want to do it before. And it sounds to me that like now he's a little upset. And it's just, dude.
Well, and here's
you're
the
doing
thing.
You. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
are you supposed to do? Hey, Josh, we'd love to do the show on the Food Network. We had a show like it before. The guy doesn't want to do it anymore. Would you like to do it? Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is I'm not even the guy who hosts the new Man vs. Food. I host another show that's similar because it's a food show, but like my show is the same as Man vs. Food, the same way it's the same as Triple D, or the same way it's the same as Good Eats. Like, yeah, they're food shows hosted by dudes.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
It's like that is what the network
you can't
does.
Own it, a fuck. It's like
it's,
a comedy.
It's like owning a genre.
No one owns a premise.
Right.
There's some guys who hit it so well that you're like, well, do I need to write another joke about it?
Yeah.
But you don't own the premise. Like, I've been wanting to talk about the first 48 forever, but every time I try to bring
people
it up,
like, Segura does that
every fucking time.
Yeah.
So it's like
who's to say your take won't be different?
It's just,
you know what I mean? But that's the thing. But I think part of the reason I felt the need to call it out was because it's just like, that's just who I am, man. Like, it's being a pussy, and it's just not being genuine.
You
and
should just tell him to DM you. Hit me up, dude. Let's talk.
But the thing is anytime. So over the course of the year, I've tried to talk to him directly and been like, hey man, like, what are you working on? Nothing, nothing. He has no interest in speaking to me. What I would have done if somebody came at me like that and I truly wasn't doing any of the things they accused me of doing, I would get on the phone with my eight. If it were fucking Wesley Snipes, I don't know why I said Wesley Snipes. It's not 1992.
Dude, you're fighting daywalkers.
But if it was Robert De Niro, I would go, I don't care what you have to do. Get me on the phone with him. I'd be like, I don't want this guy to think I'm coming at him. I respect him. So he didn't do that because everything I said was true. He didn't pick up the phone. He's two calls away. He could have called his agent, called my agent, set it up.
Like, what? Which probably means he's also been watching your show, right?
Yeah, you'd have to.
I've been
even fans of his
were like clubs Sam's playing, and like I would have to go back and research.
Yes,
what clubs you played?
Yeah,
and then call those clubs.
Well, and then the interesting thing is one of them like tweeted like TBT when we had Adam Richman here back in 2007. We miss you. Come back, Adam. And it's like, did you ask them to tweet out something nice about you to like vindicate you in this? Like, you know, you're wrong. Like, you know, you know what I said you were doing. By the way, I didn't say anybody said anything shitty about you. I just said what they had to say wasn't good. And that's subjective. From my opinion, I don't think it's good. I don't think the things that anyone has said about you in my travels makes you sound like a dude I want to kick it with.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
That's open to my interpretation. I didn't say anything. Didn't say they said anything specific or whatever.
War. Yeah. I love it, dude. And I think you would be blessed if this got picked up by the mainstream media.
Sure.
That the two food guys are going at
but
it.
But the problem is he won't engage because he truly is a coward. Like, if he really understood the potential value of it from a business perspective, he would call me and go, let's squash it. But then let's not squash it.
Yeah.
Like, let's make this thing go. Let's sell pay-per-views.
Mayweather versus McGregor.
Mayweather-McGregor.
Wink, wink. Hey, you bloody boy. Yeah. You think you can fight me? Wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the tax man. Wink, wink. Yeah. Everybody's making dollars.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing that, like, people don't understand that kind of conflict is good for business. Even if it's squashed and it's fine, it would have been good for business. It still could be good for business. But I will tell you, based on what I know and based on the way he handled this whole thing, I don't like him.
I don't think he understands it. He's a one-dick man.
I'm not going to step on that punchline. That's perfect. I think that's a great way to end it.
Yeah, for sure.
Good, man. Well, Sam, thanks for...
Thank you for breakfast, dude.
Yeah, dude. We did eat at base camp. We had French toast. It was fine. Check it out. If you're in Burbank, what do you got coming up, dude? You got the two podcasts.
I got the two podcasts, tinfoil hat,
which is a conspiracy theory.
It's a spiritual skepticism show about the official narrative. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Conspiracy, because it limits you to talking about just certain things. And we've talked about, like, we had a great shit about DMT and mushrooms.
Yeah.
With some great guests, and we've gone into everything. We're trying to set up a really big 9/11 show on 9/11. So we're trying to get a big name on that one to discuss whether it was an inside job. I personally think it was a chaperone job. I talk about it in my act about I get turned on by women with weird things about chicks, like cross-eyed. I think that's hot. Big teeth is a weird thing for me.
Really?
Like, I like really big teeth. And then I like chicks who think 9/11 was an inside job. And like, it's amazing how women just get, I mean, how the crowd gets so quiet on that shit. But we do that, and then I got a great podcast called Punch Drunk Sports with Jason Tebow and Ari Shaffir, and that's like the original sports comedy podcast. It's been going for like 6 years,
yeah,
dude.
It's one of the, it's
I keep waiting
forever.
For the wheels to fall off, but it just gets better and better, and it's like, you know, it's not really a sports show. That's kind of the jumping off point.
That's like, this is a food show.
Yeah, 100, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure, dude, for sure. Big, big, big.